again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 141. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. We cover Orlando City and the Orlando Pride, and when they triumphantly return, we will cover OCB again as well. Joining me, one of our senior columnists, David Rowe, up in Tallahassee. How are you this week, Dave?
A bit tired. Listeners might remember that I sell cars, and so end of the month, especially with a holiday weekend, busy time for moi. So glad to be doing this instead of that.
And did you sell a car?
I sold a car or two.
Okay, good. Well, that's what you need to do.
That's what actually gets me money, yes.
TCB, taking care of business.
Always be closing, baby.
Yeah, I am a little under the weather. I have spent the holiday weekend when I wasn't doing blogging responsibilities. I was trying to get my home prepared for going on the market, so much cleaning and going through books and boxes and bags of stuff that has accumulated over 12 years, and it kicks up all kinds of dust and mold and cat hair and everything else. So I'm kind of a little under the weather, but I'm going to tough this out. We're going to get through it. We're going to get through episode 141, and we're going to talk a little bit about Orlando City.
Absolutely. Although I'm a little jealous as we start to talk about them, because in our predictions, you were correct, and I was not.
Well, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. That's what I have to say about that.
It had to happen at some point. One of us had to be right.
Law of averages is to just keep guessing numbers. It's just like when I buy a Powerball ticket, Dave, and I get one number correct. It's like, okay. Right. I like to say, you know, I've had a couple of times where I've gotten like one number plus the Powerball number, and it's like, okay, cool, I won $4. And then I just, you know, I don't say it like that. I say I won the Powerball. I have a winning Powerball ticket.
That's a good point. And I was going by that logic. I was half right this past game. So, you know, I'll take it. Thank you for making me feel better.
All right. So as you alluded to, a 2-2 draw this weekend, Dave, it was a non-loss for the Orlando City Soccer Club. The Lions go out and score first and last and make it a 2-2 game. In, you know, a game that really kind of was looking like another one of those heartbreakers for a while. It was, you know, Dom got his goal, and late Scott Sutter gets his, you know, after giving up a goal late in the game, seemingly off nothing, you know, out of nowhere and off a deflection to boot. It was just like, oh, here we go again. This is the kind of thing that happens to Orlando City. They, you know, the ball deflects off the defender. Goes into the corner of the net where the goalkeeper cannot reach it, and it's a loss. But no, Scott Sutter does not care for your narratives. He would like to say, I'm here to score goals, even though I'm a defender, and he did. He went out and scored a goal in stoppage time, 2-2 draw, and it was, I believe this is correct now, Sutter with 4 goals as a Lion, 3 of them in stoppage time, and I believe all 3 were game-tying goals.
That's pretty clutch.
Right?
I mean, you know, look, we all know that he hustles and he tries hard. And, you know, the previous season he had been playing what seemed like forever. But, and, you know, we were missing him. So I guess he's got some energy now. And that's why he's able to get out there and be Mr. Clutch at the end. But who cares why? What's funny is right before he scored, I was literally thinking to myself, 2-1, wait a minute, that's what I predicted. Surely that's not going to happen. And then he scores. And I was like, okay, that makes more sense.
You must have thought that Philly would score again, because knowing it would go
maybe.
Knowing if it went 2-2, there's no way it could end that way. So you probably would have thought Philly would have made it 3-1. So
that would have made, that probably would have made more sense, yeah.
Neither one of us would have been right. The cool thing that I find about this is that, you know, I've seen a lot of comments this year about Orlando City needing new fullbacks, plural. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, Mohamed El-Munir has been suspect defensively. He's been fine going forward, but he's had some troubles on the defensive end. You know, Donny Toya has been out of the picture and is not a threat going forward. They've tried PC. They've tried Tony Rocha. They've tried Jonathan Spector this week. So the left side, certainly, you could make a case that they need a fullback. I've maintained all year, even though Sutter was out with injuries, that Scott Sutter is a he is a top-notch fullback in this league, and he is capable of being a top five right back in this league. And people don't think he's fast. I think he's got sufficient pace to play at this level. It's he's getting a little older, but he's not ancient. He still moves really well, and he's one of those guys, Dave, that any fullback in this league, even the fastest ones, are going to get burned by the fastest wings because the fastest wing players are among the fastest players in the league, and that's why they play where they do. So, it's not a matter of you need to be faster than the other team's attacker. It's you have to be fast enough to man your position. And what Scott Sutter has done in recent games is he's gotten forward, he's helped in the attack, but he's also locked down his side pretty well. There's not been that much, danger coming from his side. Now, part of that has been because teams have been attacking Jonathan Spector, teams have been attacking PC, so that is part of it. But I do think that Scott Sutter is an adequate, to decent, to maybe even good defender as a right back, and it's nice to see him scoring goals and adding, some offense to the team. I think to those of you who said that Scott Sutter is too slow and is not a quality fullback in this league, I just have to quote Homer Simpson, "In your face, Flanders."
You mentioned Spector being on the left, and I think that was a like you said a bunch of failed experiments over there, and James O'Connor finally just said, "Oh, heck with it," and I've got more center backs. So hey, Spector, do you mind going out there? You did this sometime in your past, right? And Jonathan's like, "Well, yeah, like 20 years ago, but sure." And it was better than what we'd had.
Yeah, Spector's been a fullback for quite some time. I mean, he's played a lot of fullback. He's more natural on the right side, but to try him on the left, I think was a good move to see what you got. Now, a lot of people complained about his performance. I don't think that he played poorly. I think that you have to know going in you're not going to get a lot of attack out of him. He's not going to get up the field. He's going to maybe be a little more cautious because the fact is Philadelphia has a very potent bunch of attacking midfielders with Picot and Sapong and of course Dochkal. He's not going to cheat forward. He'll pick his spots and be sneaky at times, which he was in the game. And but I thought he did fine. In fact, I gave him a good grade. I thought he was fine, and a lot of people thought he was a problem, and I didn't think he was a problem at all. His defense was good. He had the one goal there by Corey Burke was crossed in from his side, but he was playing deeper than where Dochkal was. It wasn't his man crossing it in, is what I'm trying to say. So I don't think that he had any major meltdowns defensively. I think he was solid. He was certainly more solid than what we've seen from PC and El Munir in recent games. I think that he did fine. And going in, you're not going to get a lot of offense. It's going to leave a hole when there's no room for Yotun. When he runs out of room or gets closed down, he's going to need an outlet that he didn't always have. But I guess the good thing about having Spector playing left back and knowing that there's going to be some space not filled is that Yoshi covered a lot of ground.
More Yoshi on the ball is a good thing, to put it very bluntly.
Yeah, and you could tell though it did take its toll on Yoshi toward the end of the game. He was not moving real good toward the end of that game. Of course, he had a couple of weeks off, one because Orlando was off, and two because he got a two-game suspension.
Yeah.
So that will take its toll on a hot summer night in Orlando, as he faltered down the stretch and didn't have the jump in the legs that he once did, and it kind of helped lead to the goal by Picot because he had an opportunity to dispossess Picot and couldn't do it. Just didn't have enough energy or strength to do it, and Picot powered through him and knocked the ball in off Shane O'Neill, and that was unfortunate. It's certainly not all on Yoshi because Picot went through a couple of players on that play, and it was an unfortunate deflection, not Bendick's fault. Obviously, it was it looked like a game-winning goal at the time, but Scott Sutter said, "Nope, not tonight."
Gotta love it when Sutter gets up there. I think he's a very intimidating looking guy. I mean, I'm sure he's really nice guy. But on the field, I mean, with that, with the short hair and the look of determination, the ball might have just been scared into the goal. excellent goal. And everybody at our house, we're kind of eating a late dinner and watching it. And he puts that in, and there's eruptions at the dinner table, mouths full of food, but still, yelling, yes. So it was quite a goal.
And we did speak a little about Yoshi. Picture perfect delivery on the early free kick that Dom headed home. Mm-hmm. Just an unbelievable, set piece delivery like we're used to from Yoshi. Dom got free of his defender, and he did what Dom does, and that's score goals when he wants.
He absolutely scores when he wants, and that wasn't the only good chance created by Yoshi. I mean, he had 11 crosses, five of which were truly good. Of course, he had the free kick service in on Dom's goal. He did exactly what we've kind of come to expect from him. I mean, he's solid all night other than that late breakdown. But like you said, covering a lot more ground maybe than usually has to. He played an outstanding match. Obviously, Dom did a great job doing what Dom does, is get in there, mix it up, get the head on the ball, and put it in the back of the net. And he's now tied for third on goals in a season. Is that right?
I believe he is tied with Laren's third highest goal total with Orlando City. So, yeah, I think it's the third highest total since Orlando City joined MLS. So
since MLS, yeah.
But we want to see him on 18 goals at the end of the year so that he can mm-hmm. have the record, because we want him to have the record and not – we want an American international and not a Canadian international to have the record.
That's right. An American international with a British accent, yes. Specifically. Now that Yoshi's back and giving that good service into Dom, we might see it. That's a potent attacking combination. So, we got a point out of it, and after so many not getting points, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, overall, I thought the game was a decent game, considering the fact that Philadelphia had been really playing well of late, and. You kind of had it almost chalked up as a loss the way Philly had been playing lately. But, Orlando played really well in the first half for the most part. Probably could have done a little better in the attack a few times. Yotun had, I believe, seven chances created. And, you would have thought maybe the team could have cashed in more than that. But it was, I think more important to defend the Philly attack and try to pick spots, and that's kind of what they did. Kleshchen came back only after a couple of training sessions, so he tried to go. He went as long as he could. It didn't look like he was moving all that well. Didn't look like he quite had the stamina or the energy that we're used to from him. Mm-hmm. So he was subbed out in the second half. They brought in, Coleman. Coleman really played well in spots. He was kind of inconsistent, as you might expect from a young player like that, but the moments of brilliance that he had were tremendous. In fact, he assisted on the game tying goal.
Yeah, it's like you said, I'm not expecting him to go out and live up to the potential that we think he has right now. That's part of growing and growing his game. So it was good to see him. It's nice seeing him come on late. I think that's a good spot for him. I thought Carlos Askew's also played a good game on the back line, and having him paired with O'Neill, I think is pretty good. Even though I think Askew's had a better game than O'Neill, but still having those two be able to be in the middle, and that allowed Spector to go out to the left, that provided a little bit more stability. And then of course, Dom being Dom and Yoshi being Yoshi, there's very little to complain about when it comes to those two.
Yep. James O'Connor emptied his bench of defensive midfielders and put them all on the field. Christian Aguita played really well in the first half and really poorly in the second half,
Yeah.
but he came off without getting a card, so that's a win.
That's right.
Will Johnson gave his usual workmanlike effort, hustling and providing energy and doing whatever he could. Rossell looked pretty good. Asquez playing center back for the first time with this team mostly looked good. He had a couple of glitches trying to play the ball forward where he turned it over. I've seen some commenters and some people on Twitter saying that he didn't play well and he's a better defensive midfielder. And maybe that's true, but I didn't think he had a poor debut. I think he had those turnovers. He'll have to cut those down, obviously. But it's been a while since he's played center back, and he's gonna have to get used to his new partner and things like that. So I thought overall he did well. Certainly enough to give him another look there. But right now, I mean, James O'Connor's still looking for the best 11 he can field, and he hasn't found it yet, and that's evident in the results.
Yeah, and at this point in the season, I mean, he might as well experiment, see what he's got, see who's going to keep. I'm not saying I that's not to say that he's not trying to win matches. So let's not anybody assume that from what I'm saying. I think that he's trying to figure out who to put out where, what combination is going to work. And of course, we talk about center back pairings. That's typically something that time is needed for the communication and a partnership to develop. And we've had, almost a new center back pairing every single game, it feels like. So there's going to be problems when that happens. Like you said, ton of defensive midfielders. So put them on the field, see who can do what. And I don't know what the right combination is either. They don't pay me for that. But it's, I don't know. I fully expect that we might see some changes this weekend as well.
Well, we'll have to see some changes because Yoshimar Yotun is going off to play for Peru, and he will not be available. Amro Tarek will not be available. And also, Mohamed El Munir will not be available. He's missed the last two games. One was a coach's decision, and one was he had to go to DC to clear up some paperwork for his call-up. So he had some visa issues there. So there was that. There was, Tarek's been on the bench the last couple of games. He won't be around. So it'll be interesting to see who goes out and plays against Sporting Kansas City. You would imagine former SKC stars Yuri Rossell and Dom Dwyer to both be in the lineup. Other than that, it is anyone's guess. I'm assuming we'll see Aguita and Kleshchen and Asquez and probably O'Neal and Sutter. And other than that, it's a toss-up. We'll probably see all the available defensive midfielders because that's what seems to be the heart of this team right now. It's like, well, we're not going to score a bunch of goals, so let's try to win the ball in the midfield, That
Yeah,
seems
just
to be the right
hold
goal.
on to the ball as long as we can. I can see it now when he's picking the line. Defensive midfielder? No. Okay, hold on. Defensive midfielder? Yes, put him in. Defensive midfielder, put him in.
Yeah, so one of them that we haven't seen in a few games, though, a couple of them that we haven't seen in a few games, Dylan Powers and Tony Rocha, we haven't seen them in a few games, not even in the lineup on Saturday. Pierre Da Silva was in the lineup, but he didn't get in the game. So lots going on. You're going to go out and play Kansas City. Dom with his homecoming of sorts, I guess, depending on how you look at it, he's either coming home to Kansas City. If you're a Kansas City fan, or he's going on the road, with his home club. If you're an Orlando fan, both fan bases sort of claim their city as his home, and it's probably a case where both things are true. But it would be I really want him to score because I want to see what he's going to do. I want to see if he's going to, play it cool and not celebrate, like we see so often with players who return to their old stomping grounds, or I want to see if he does the flip.
Yeah, that would be that's the two options. There's no celebration other than the flip, or he does nothing. That's it.
So yeah, so I'm interested to see what happens there.
I want to see him score more than once, honestly.
Well, it's been a while since he's had a brace, so yeah, I would definitely be up for that, and of course that would put him closer to the team's goal scoring record in MLS, which is something I'm in favor of. So that would be good. But yeah, it was a draw, another a point rescued at the end for James O'Connor on his birthday. So happy birthday, Gaffer! You got a point for your birthday. Sorry you didn't get all three. They got lost. The other two got lost in the mail, I think.
Yeah, happy birthday, but well, honestly, the way things are going, that's about as good of a birthday gift as you can expect.
Yeah, can James O'Connor please get a second victory, please?
Right.
I don't know if it's going to happen this week. The team has not been good on the road. It's funny because it was, I remember distinctly tweeting early in the year that Orlando City had, I think, three or four wins, three, I think, wins on the road last year. And I said, oh, they already have two on the road this year. That was after three road games. Still
Yeah.
sitting on two.
Way to go, Michael.
Yeah, it's all on me. It's my fault. But all I said was the truth that they already had two. I didn't say that they were going to get a third or fourth. I just said they already had two, and they had many, many, many games lying ahead to break last year's mark. And they still could do it, and they might not.
Wait, so it could happen or it might not?
Yes,
Now,
both of
both of
those are
those are true.
possible. Yes, or they could end up with the exact same number as last year.
They could. So that's the kind of in-depth quality programming you get here on the Mainland Podcast.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like the tweets from the Cleveland Indians account this year have been hilarious. They've been, they'll talk about a win and they'll say that's, Cleveland's still unbeaten in games in which they scored more runs than the opponent. Things like
Nice.
that. So it's been funny to watch those tweets. Anyway, we will get into Orlando City at Sporting Kansas City. Too many cities in these names. A little bit later in the show, we'll give you our key matchups and our scoreline predictions. But we're also going to bring in our special guest now to talk about the matchup, and I'll get to that. We'll get to that right after this. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, very happy to have with us from the Blue Testament, that is the SB Nation site that covers Sporting Kansas City. Happy to have with us Thad Bell. Thad, thanks for being with us on the podcast.
Hey, no problem, man. I'm happy to join you guys.
It's been a while since we've had you. Actually, in 6 days, it will be 3 years to the day since you were last on with us.
Wow.
No, it. That's what happens when these Eastern and Western Conference teams don't play each other very much. You don't get to talk to the rest of the bloggers around the league as often as you might like to. But so anyway, Thad, I guess the big headline for Saturday night is Dom Dwyer returning to the Blue Hell. What are you hearing from sporting fans about Dom Dwyer coming back? What kind of reception do you expect he'll get, and what do you think we'll see from him on Saturday?
Really, I haven't heard much, quite honestly. I thought I would hear more if it had been probably more recent, or sooner after the trade, it might have been different. But or even just 2 months ago, it might have been different when Sporting was looking for a center forward who would score once in a while. But they seem to have found one now, even though they've had him all along. So it's really actually been kind of quiet. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of chatter about that, but I think it'll be kind of a mixed reception. I mean, some people will love him for his time here, and some people will want to give him crap because now he's not. So,
Yeah, typical fan stuff, I guess, right?
yeah, pretty much. You'll have a little bit of everything.
Knowing what you know about Dom, if he does score a goal, what do you think he'll do? Do you think he'll be kind of a non-celebrator, or do you think he'll, do his flip?
I think he'll do a slip.
Just rub it in a little bit.
I think because I mean, I don't think, quite honestly, I don't think he was upset with the trade, but at the same time, I think he probably felt that, it was a little bit of a slap to the face. I know his wife kind of made some comments like that, so.
What was his relationship like with Peter Vermes, do you think, at the end?
I don't really know right at the end, but I'll tell you a conversation I overheard just a little tiny bit of one time, and I probably shouldn't, but because I was walking past a room they were having a meeting in with it was a whole team meeting before a game or something, and I heard something along the lines of Peter saying, "Dom, you're an asshole, but you're our asshole." So, like it was a good thing, so.
Yeah, and kind of that's his It's sort of his personality on the field, isn't it? He's a bit of an agitator. He gets under guys' skin. He's not afraid to take a yellow card here and there. He is kind of I guess an asshole for lack of a better word when it comes to the opposition, right?
Oh yeah, he was a magnificent pest, and he did that role really, really well. And quite honestly, I think in the right team, he is a magnificently good player. I think the only problem with Sporting is Sporting style kept slowly changing and evolving, and it became less effective with him as part of that role. It's not a knock on him, it's just the team changed a little bit.
Sure, I mean, if you have pieces that don't fit anymore, you kind of have to jettison them and find pieces that do, especially when they're not inexpensive like Dom Dwyer. So certainly understandable why Sporting would part with him. I know that Orlando ruffled a lot of feathers in terms of the whole Dom's coming home thing when Dom got traded back here. Obviously, he was on loan here from Sporting Kansas City, and we all know that, but I think more than being an intentional slap to Sporting fans, I think it just shows you how much this city embraced him back in the USL days, you know?
Yeah, and I think the bad part about it wasn't when he was traded. It was some of the stuff well before that when Heath talked about how this was his spiritual home. I think that was the phrase he
Yeah, that
used.
was the very odd thing
And
that he said, yes.
and then quite honestly, and every fan base has this, so don't get me wrong, but there was a few Orlando fans who were just very like, he belongs here, this is his home. That was long before the trade. So that I think that's where all that built up. I don't think it had much to do with the actual trade itself. It was all that pre stuff. I mean, Orlando's got some fantastic fans. You guys also have a few toxic ones here.
Yeah, I mean
Most do.
it's a fan base. So every fan base has its knuckleheads, and there really are no exceptions to that. That's the I think maybe the lone universal rule without any exceptions. But it's going to be interesting to see him back in Sporting Kansas City and to see how the fans respond to him. I'm sure they'll be giving him the business as they do there in the Blue Hell. And I guess for those of us that we don't get to see Sporting a lot, I know Sporting started off pretty well and then went through a bit of a slump for a bit and seems to be rebounding from that. What can you tell us about Sporting's season in 2018?
Interesting. It's like they were more successful than they played, or they were less successful than they played almost every single time. They never seem to be like at the level they're playing, if that makes any sense. They got a lot of good results against really good teams, Atlanta and things like that. But then you could say, well, they were helped by red cards or odd calls or something like that. And then like even this last match when they lost in Seattle, there was a awkward bounce that was an own, ended up being an own goal and a PK called, which was legit. I'm not saying it wasn't. Things like that. But it's just kind of like, okay, all the bounces go the right way, all the bounces go the wrong way. Sporting can be really good at times, and they when they're on, they can play with the best teams in the league, and when they're not, they can barely play with the worst teams. So.
One of the big stories of last year was Tim Melia. How has he been this year? Has he kept up that level that he had going?
There's been a couple games here and there where he did not look to be the Superman that he was last year, but for the most part, he's been really consistently pretty good. There's been more times where his defense let him down and left him hung out to dry. But that's been probably the biggest problem for Sporting this year is the defense was not so good the first few games, locked it down, was really good for a while. Went into a bad spell again, and now seem to be, getting it back together. Have got it back together again, barring the last game.
Is this a team that can legitimately win the West and potentially even mount a late charge for a supporter shield?
Yes and no. Yes to the West. And I caught a lot of flack 2 months ago when they were, on a great win streak for everybody's like, oh, because they were, points wise, they were right up there, and I thought they were too inconsistent, and there were too many holes, and there was just a few too many things that were wrong. And I on our podcast, I said that I didn't think that they would be a supporter Shield candidate. And then everything went to crap, and everybody's like, oh, you know, they're the worst thing ever. So now I'm on the other side. No, they're pretty good. You guys got to have some faith. And it's, but I just didn't think they were that going to be that strong and that consistent throughout the season to compete with the couple best teams in the league. But I do think they have a legitimate chance to win the West. It's probably took a hit last week, but it really just, you know, next couple games will really tell that out, because they play Dallas and LAFC both at the end of the season. So that will be the real test there.
Now, there's been some turnover with the team since we last saw you guys. And of course, you know, since we only see you once a year, that's pretty much always the case. But, you know, the fans here, they know Beisler, they know Zusi. Who are some of the guys flying under the radar sort of on the national stage that Orlando City fans should know about and be wary of come Saturday?
Well, on the national stage, as far as U.S. or just any?
No, I mean, like guys that you guys know really well because they're local, but maybe around the country they're not getting quite as much ink as maybe they would if they were playing for New York City or Atlanta or LAFC.
Well, that's a good question. I will always go to Ilya Sanchez because, like, to me, Ilya is pretty much the key guy on the team at the moment. But he's a D-mid, so, you know, obviously you never, like, go, oh, he's the greatest player in the league kind of thing, right? But he's way up there. Problem for Sporting this weekend, and kind of segue maybe into something you're going to ask later, but is they're missing their, what I would consider to be their three starters on the forward line right now. They're all up on international duty. Mm-hmm. Daniel Shalloway, Johnny Russell, and Diego Rubio are all gone. Also Jalen Lindsay, but he's not been a regular starter. So the forward line, the entire forward line will be guys who maybe would have been starting on any other time, but would not have been considered the starters at this point.
Yeah, and you know, Orlando's got a lot of that going on as well. Our best player, Yoshimar Yotun, will be out with Peru. Mohamed El Munir will be out with Libya, and Amro Tarek will be with Egypt. So those three will not be playing, although of late Tarek and El Munir have not been starting. But certainly Yotun is the big loss for Orlando City in that game, and really the team has struggled without him this year. So he's kind of he's the guy that's going to get 90 touches a game. He's going to glue the back line to the attack and be that conduit, and can play in the set piece balls perfectly for people to just easily head home and that kind of thing. So you're going to see a little bit from the purple side of the ledger as well. Where do you see this game being won and lost? What are the key matchups for this particular contest?
I think it will be probably it'll be both forward lines against the defenses, because, I mean, obviously Dom's going to be there. He's going to be really well motivated to score. Because I, quite honestly, if I was going to bet anything, I would bet that Dom scores a goal. Just because he has to, right? Storyline. You know, Ike Opara is going to be out this weekend, and so we don't know who's going to be partnering with Matt Beisler. It could be Andreo Fontas's first game with Sporting. He's a former Barcelona Celta Vigo guy. So he's quality, but we'll just see if he's how much he plays. You know, it plays that game. But then on the opposite side is obviously, you know, the second line for Sporting's forwards, if how they will be able to attack you guys.
So. All right. Yeah, that's, I mean, there's a lot of unknowns with the players out and that kind of thing. And one thing we do know is that Sporting is usually pretty tough at home. It's a good environment. How do you see this game playing out? What do you think the score is going to be at the end of the game?
That's one of those things that everybody always asks. And quite honestly, I almost always answer 2-2. That way I'm a little bit safe no matter which way it goes. If I was going to bet, which I don't really do too often, but if I was going to bet, I would bet that Sporting wins the game. And I would just say 2-1, because I know you guys have struggled. You know, not that you guys don't have a really good team. It's just not putting it together right at the moment. So that's not trying to be a slam on you guys, but just know you guys are struggling, and know Sporting needs to get on the right side of things, and they can. So that's kind of where I see it at the moment.
Well, you don't have to be diplomatic here, Thad. I mean, the team's won one time in the last 17 games. You can say it's not a good team because it, you know, you are what your record says, as the old saying goes. Thad,
sure, but you have players that, I mean, I have a lot of respect for the quality of a lot of those players, yeah. Though. You know, the Kleshins, the Yuri Rosell, Dom. You know, I don't know all your players, but the ones that I do know are hit players that just are not. When things go bad, they go bad, and mm-hmm. It went bad for you guys.
You know, that's a good point, too. Rosell also with a bit of a homecoming here for you know, with Orlando coming to Sporting Kansas City. What are your thoughts on seeing him back in the league, and, you know, how was that news, you know, met by Sporting fans?
You know, I think Kansas City fans are pretty much, you know, once they love you, right? Especially when you leave and come back to somebody else in the league. So they were pretty unhappy when Namath came back to go to New England, and they, a lot of them were happy when he came back to Kansas City now, finally. Of course, he hasn't done much of anything. But for Yuri, you know, he had some really good games for Kansas City. He was part of a couple of championships, and people really liked him. He was kind of the precursor to getting Ilya. A lot of similarities to how those guys play, and I would love to see those two in like a 4-2-3-1 type of situation, because it would just be amazing. I haven't really got the chance to see Yuri as much when I've watched. It's been bad games for you guys, so it was not really the best games for Yuri. So I've kind of been wondering how he's been doing for you all.
Well, he's sort of struggled at first, and I think he's, over the last month or so, he's finally looked like the player that I think Orlando City fans thought they were getting a couple of games ago. He had a monster game against DC United in a game that I'm sure everyone has seen the highlights from at the end of the game. But Rosell was really one of the best players in that match. Everybody remembers the Wayne Rooney long assist at the end where the offside didn't get called, and the other earlier offside was ruled offside and then changed. And it was a game of we have a saying on the podcast, pro gonna pro. And that's kind of what happened a lot in that game. There were four controversial plays reviewed, and basically all of them went against Orlando and helped build that Rooney legend that the league was so wanting to get going. So, I think Rosell over the last month has looked a lot more solid, maybe just now getting used to his teammates, getting back used to MLS play. I know he wasn't playing as often when he was in Europe, so maybe it just took a while to get that rhythm back, but he looks like he's been better of late, and certainly he's been a more dangerous setup man in recent games, so I think that maybe he's finally turning a corner. But I guess we'll see what happens on Saturday, Thad. So I think it's going to be an entertaining game. Orlando games, even though they lose a lot, tend to be entertaining one way or the other. There's sure to be a controversial call somewhere along the line, and either related to a red card or a penalty. And it will be interesting. I think that's, you know, the old saying, may you live in interesting times, the old curse. I think that's what Orlando is going through right now. They're living in interesting times.
Yeah, and quite honestly, if I was going to make a wild prediction, it'd be Dom getting a red. But it would be a two yellow situation, one for a foul and one for taking his jersey off when he scored. You know what I mean?
I could see that happening. I do recall that he got a red card coming back to Orlando the first time that he played here. I think it was back in 2015. He got a red card in that game. So that was there's a precedent for it, obviously.
And it's happened with former Sporting players coming back to Kansas City for the first time also. That happened with Namath, actually, when he was with New England. He started the game against Sporting last year and threw an elbow at Zusi. Not a vicious elbow either, but, I mean, it was definitely a high arm back to the face, mm-hmm. you know. And they barred him, and he was like, what's a bar? And he got the red card, so.
Oh, goodness. Well, Thad, tell people where they can find your stuff on the internet.
TheBlueTestament.com, and the reason it's the Blue Testament is all the Kansas City soccer teams had blue colors at the time that we renamed the blog. So,
it makes sense. It makes sense. All right, Thad Bell, manager of the Blue Testament, thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to talking to you again down the road.
All right, hey, good luck, and not on Saturday, but any other day.
All right, thanks.
All right, man, take care, guys.
All right, we want to thank Thad Bell from the Blue Testament for stopping by and being our guest here on episode 141 of the Mainland Podcast. And Dave, you know, earlier when we were discussing Orlando City and the Philadelphia Union, we forgot to give our Man of the Match awards out. So why don't you tell me who was your Man of the Match?
Wow, it seems like so long ago. All right, my Man of the Match, I was up in the air between it could have gone to Dom for scoring a goal. It could have gone to Yoshi for playing like he did. But ultimately, I've got to go with Scott Sutter because he scored a goal and also played really well. So incredible passing percentage, looked good and you know, got the draw for us in stoppage again. So, yeah, there you go. Scott Sutter.
All right. I would say man of the match or woman of the match, whichever the case may be, is whoever brought the cookies up to the press box before halftime, because
nice.
That was it was really great to have them up there before halftime. I would say, Scott Sutter is who I picked. I did the grades this week, and he was excellent in all facets of the game, offensively, defensively. He was something like 6 for 6 on his long ball accuracy. He had one cross the field switch to, I believe it was Yoshi, that was, I described it as porn for passing enthusiasts. That's
Ooh.
How good that pass was. It was you needed a break. You needed to take a nap after watching that pass. It was unbelievable.
Have a cigarette.
Yeah. I don't condone that, so I'm not saying that.
No, we don't condone. I don't smoke. We don't condone smoking.
It's nasty. It stinks. But anyway, yes, it was a fantastic night for Scott Sutter, and he's deserving man of the match. So he is our man of the match. Dave, let's get to some questions from the listeners, shall we?
My favorite part.
Okay, so you can ask the Mainland Podcast literally any question you want to ask. Doesn't have to be soccer related. It can be soccer related. It can have something to do with the crankcase on your 57 Chevy.
Sure.
We might not know the answer, but we will give you an answer.
Oh, yeah. No, we'll give you an answer. You could even ask us about our favorite type of Italian food. I don't know that I have one, but, you know, it's worth asking.
Yeah, you'll give an answer.
I'll give an answer.
All right. You can ask us anything in two different ways. You can hit us up on Twitter. We are at the Mainland. And you spell Maine, M-A-N-E, like a lion's mane, as you would. And just hit us up with that hashtag, AskTMLPC. If you want to, you can do it the old-fashioned way and email us. We are themainland@gmail.com. Once again, spell Maine like a lion's mane, and you will have it correct. So let's get to tonight's questions or this week's questions. It might not be night whenever you're listening to this, but it's night when we're recording it. So that's why we say things like this, because
yeah, you know, timey wimey, wibbly wobbly, just deal with it.
We're in the moment when we do the podcast. I will start with Lee, friend of the podcast. Lee wants to know, is a very very serious question, Dave.
Okay.
And this question is Clint Dempsey the greatest American soccer player ever? Of course, Deuce was made news this week, so retiring from professional soccer. Dave, is Deuce the greatest American soccer player ever?
He's up there. I won't say he's the greatest. With the different positions and different times of, you know, people playing in different World Cups and what their team around them was like, it's hard for me to say he's the greatest. But I will absolutely say he is one of the greatest. He was the first American to score a goal in 3 World Cups. He obviously, you know, is tied for the number of goals with Landon Donovan. So, I mean, the the numbers are there for him to be considered, and an argument could be made to be, I could be convinced. I just haven't given it enough thought to go yay or nay on it.
Yeah, I am a big time, I guess you would say, waffler when it comes to greatest ever, because I really find it impossible to compare players that are from different generations. Like, you know, saying, you know, is Alex Rodriguez better than Babe Ruth and that kind of thing? I don't know. They played at different times when people did different things and prepared for the game in different ways. And I think that that's the case in every sport. So I don't know if he's the greatest American soccer player ever. I will say he's in the conversation, and he's probably very prominent in that conversation. Certainly he's fun. He was maybe the most fun to watch. I love the way his try stuff mentality, you know, just try stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you would, you know, typically not see out of an American player, but you see it a lot out of South American players. Just the willingness to try something that is maybe futile and maybe spectacular. I loved watching Deuce play, and you know, hopefully you know, it'd be nice if he went out and did what do you call the games when they do
farewell tour?
Yeah. The thing they do, the testimonial game. That's what the European players do when they're, you know, with the longtime European veteran players. They have those testimonial games. And hopefully they have one for Clint, because it'd be nice to see him ride one more time. Yeah, and I would love to see it happen in a U.S. game, because maybe then he would break the tie with Landon Donovan.
And that would certainly help his argument, or the argument for him being one of the great, or the greatest, if he was able to do that. So, but yeah, I'd love to see him get out there. And I almost feel like if he did, and it wasn't in the U.S. Jersey, I feel he would score. Like it just would happen.
Yeah, most non-penalty kick goals in U.S. history, right?
Yeah.
So thank you, Lee, for that question. We did answer it, even though it was really a wishy-washy answer from both of us.
But it was heartfelt.
It was. We love us some Clint, except when he's playing for the Sounders against us, against Orlando.
Right, but otherwise, we love the Deuce.
Absolutely. Ryan Smith has asked us, which of these jerseys would you donate for a chance to win? To Write Love on Her Arms is a nonprofit that, of course, Ashlyn Harris is very involved in, U.S. Women's National Team and Orlando Pride goalkeeper. The jerseys are from the U.S.'s game on Friday night against Chile, which was won by the U.S. Women's National Team 3-0. We might be able to touch on that a little bit in a few minutes. But the players' jerseys involved are Harris, Heath, Alex Morgan, and Kristen Press. Dave, which of those four jerseys would you donate for a chance to win? You know, would you make a donation to win one of those four jerseys? Which jersey would you go for?
Ooh, well, gosh, I guess I'd have to go for Alex Morgan's jersey. You know, both U.S. and Pride player, so there's that. And then you know, everybody loves a goal scorer. So I would happily do so for any of them, honestly, but if I have to pick one, that's where I would go. So
Alex is your pick. I agree. Alex, you know, holds you know, special meaning to those of us in Orlando, so does Ashlyn, so either of those would be fine. Of course, Tobin Heath is a very great player in her own right. Kristen Press, though, 100th cap, and she scored a goal, so maybe maybe a little more value for the 100th cap jersey for Kristen Press. But you can't go wrong with any of them. Great cause.
And especially it's a really great cause. For those who don't know, it's dedicated to presenting hope and finding help for people struggling with depression, addiction, self-injury, and suicide. So it's, you know, if you've got the means and the inclination, you know, go ahead and donate and you know, see, you never know who it's going
to
help.
Right. If you want to find out more about that, the Twitter account is at TWLOHA, and you can find the tweet about it and find out how to get involved with that. Thank you, Ryan Smith, and thanks, Lee. Thank you guys for your questions this week. A small mailbag. There were no five-star reviews to read on the air, so we are moving right along, Dave, as we have to talk about. Let's talk about the U.S. women first before we talk about the Pride and then get into the Kansas Sporting Kansas City game a little bit more. The U.S. playing Chile for the first time, a pair of friendlies. In fact, as we record this, they'll play the second game tonight, which is why we're kind of zipping through some of this, because I got to cover that game tonight.
Yeah, this is going to be a short podcast, and we actually mean it this time.
The U.S. basically dominant. Chile came out with a lot of energy and did a lot of good things, but you could tell pretty early on that Chile, even though they were the second best team in South America and have already qualified for the World Cup next year, you could tell they were not on the same athletic level as the U.S. women's national team, and the U.S. ground them down over the course of the 90 minutes. In fact, as the game wore on and on, it just looked like it was more and more lopsided. Now, it was only a 3-0 win, but you also have to take into account that Kristen Press lost a goal in the most bizarre fashion imaginable. A penalty was given for a foul in the box. Press stepped up, scored on it, and everybody thought that it was a goal. And really, up until halftime, everybody thought it was a goal, just about, which was, it was almost on the stroke of halftime, actually. But the goal was pulled back, and a free kick was given. And it was bizarre because, you know, it was apparently called back for encroachment, but the Chile defender encroached and stepped into the box before Crystal Dunn did. So it shouldn't have been anything except a goal. And then if you, let's say, for example, the Chile player did not step into the box, or if the referee didn't see it, because Kristen scored, all it is a retake.
Yeah.
It's not ever a free kick in that situation. So we got no real explanation. It was a head scratcher. Nobody knew what was going on. It was weird to see the U.S. players all surrounding the referee as they went to the locker room at halftime. It's usually a post-game thing, not a halftime thing. But it was clear there were a lot of unhappy people, because at that point, Press hadn't scored, and it was her 100th cap in her hometown. And you have to think that was an incredibly special moment for her that got taken away for no reason.
Yeah, and it's your heart is bleeding for her at that point, because there was no reason for it. And like I said, to go into the locker room, I imagine there were quite a few grumpy faces in the crowd following that one. So it was, fortunately, it was only halftime, so there was still time.
Yeah. So it was 2-0 at the half on Tierna Davidson scored her first goal for the U.S. First international goal for Tierna Davidson, I believe her 11th cap. And, she's a center back. So it was good to see her score, get on the score sheet. Julie Ertz did not score the second goal, but she created it. It was an own goal, but it was from a corner, just like Davidson's goal was off a corner. And Ertz's goal, the goal that wasn't hers, but it was basically created by her, was one of those beautiful flick-on plays. And it was just bundled in by the Chilean defender, and may have gone in anyway, but it goes down as an own goal, and it was 2-0, and Press would have made it 3-0 with the penalty, but that didn't count, so it was 2-0 at the halftime, but it was not that close. And it's not that that the U.S. played particularly well in the game, but they just weren't able to find the final ball a lot of times when they had opportunities to score. They came out in the second half. Morgan came out at halftime, and a couple other players. They made some changes. Carly Lloyd came on. Carly Lloyd could have scored a hat trick. In fact, she scored a goal off of the crossbar that landed inside the goal beyond the line, but it was not spotted by anybody, and so they played on. And the replay showed pretty clearly that it was a goal, but there's no video review in the friendly, so it didn't count. So that was really two goals more that the U.S. should have had. I keep wanting to say Orlando. Of course, I should know that when we're talking about goals they should have scored, Orlando will always come up, because they never score as many as they should.
It's a reflex. It's a reflex at this point.
But anyway, the U.S. did add a third, and it was Kristen Press, so she got her storybook after all. And despite Carly having another couple of excellent opportunities, no other goals were scored. There was, I think, in the first half, I think it was Horan scored a goal. It was called back on a foul. There was another goal, I think, called back. I mean, it was just a crazy game. It could have been a 6 or 7 nothing game, but it only ended up 3-0. But the U.S. with a win in the first ever meeting between the two sides. They'll play again tonight, last night, if you're getting this when it drops. And we'll, of course, you can head over to themainland.com and read about the recap of the game. It really sucked, too, because it was Friday night, and they're showing tennis on ESPN2, and it kicked the game to streaming only. Like they had no, overflow channel for the U.S. women, and so I had to watch on Watch ESPN for, I don't know, like 30 minutes, and then it finally came on ESPN News, and so I put on ESPN News, and then after it'd be on ESPN News for a while, they kicked it over to ESPN2 and gave you about a tenth of a second notice that they were going to do that. So I was like, God, I got to change.
Boy, if there's not a if that's not a an example, the prime example of the lack of equality in regards to the women's national team, that there just shows it completely. It's like, okay, yeah, we're gonna show it. Well, no, now it's gonna be over here. Up, now go online. Up, no, over here. Back over here. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's no way they're doing that if it's the men and Christian
No.
Pulisic is playing. There's no way that happens.
Nope.
They will give you plenty of, and you'll be like, okay, we're going to be switching our coverage over to ESPN2 now. Go on over to ESPN2, everybody. Don't want to miss it. Go ahead and flip those channels. Is everybody over there? Good. Now we, it was like, it was just like, okay, we're going to continue our coverage on ESPN2, and it was gone. Like as soon as Ian was done saying that, it was gone, and I was like, ah.
Jeez.
Where's my clicker?
Boy.
Anyway, it is what it is. Anyhow, so the U.S. won. Dave, the Pride will conclude their 2018 season on Saturday afternoon at Sky Blue FC. Sky Blue, as we record this, has not yet won a game. I think they have a midweek game coming up, and then maybe it against Chicago, and then they will have the Pride on Saturday. On a scale of 1 to 10, how afraid of are you of the Pride giving Sky Blue FC their only win of the year?
Oh, somewhere around 8 or 9.
Yeah, it's pretty high on my list too, because this is a team that has given Orlando fits in Orlando, and then they'll be at home. So, and if it's the last game of the season and Sky Blue hasn't got a win, they're going to play with incredible determination and desperation, and against a team, frankly, from the Pride that has not played with much desperation this year.
And now has even less to play for. So one team has everything to play for, literally the only win that they would get, and the other one, not so much. Maybe thinking about what they're going to do in the off season, or whether they're going to be there, or I don't know what they're going to have for dinner, or who knows. I really hope that's not the case. I mean, I mentioned last week. I really hoping that it's that they have that the Pride have more pride than that, and they go out and they do what they're supposed to, take care of business.
Right.
But I'm like you said, I'm absolutely, I'm almost glad that I'm going to be working and not watching, because unfortunately I work on Saturdays, because that way perhaps my blood pressure will stay lower.
Perhaps. Dave, what do you think? Do you think this is Tom Sermonti's last game coaching the Orlando Pride, or do you think it is contingent upon a result on Saturday?
I don't think it's contingent upon a result. Whether it's his last game or not, that's a tougher one. I don't think that this game is gonna. If he's gone, I feel that the decision has probably already been made, and they're simply letting the clock wind down on the season. And if they are keeping him, then it doesn't matter at that point either. So, oof. I kind of hope not. I think that I think that he can still do a good job, and there were pieces that didn't fit together, things that were worse than the previous season. But I don't know, you know, you may know better how much of that's you think is on Tom and how much is it is on the senior players, but, or even the new players, but, I don't know. I don't know. It depends on how, I mean, they're not afraid about changing coaches at the, on the men's team. So it's certainly a possibility.
Yeah. I could see a situation where maybe they haven't made up their mind yet. And then it's like a 3-1 loss to give Sky Blue its only win of the year could be the deciding factor. I could see that happening. An embarrassing loss in the finale might tip the scale if it's a situation where they're on the fence about it. As for the Pride's performances this year, I think there's blame to go around. I think it is on Tom. I think it is on the players. I don't think it's just one or the other. I think too many times people look at a roster and say, if that roster doesn't win, it's the coach's fault. That's not always the case. I mean, sometimes players just don't mix well with other players. And when you have some changes and some turnover, I think that can happen. It only sometimes takes one or two changes to completely upset the balance. And I think that this is not a team that is clicking like it did last year. A down year from Morgan in many respects, a down year from Marta in some respects, even though individually they, you know, you look at their performances and they were fine. They just weren't together. You know what I mean? The parts have to mesh and they weren't meshing. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think it's not just on those two players. I think it's on a lot of players. I don't think Ashlyn Harris had as good a season this year. I don't think Allie Krieger had as good a season this year. You know, right on down the line. I think you can go right down the list of players. Certainly Alana Kennedy didn't play as good this season. It's not just a player thing, and it's not just a coaching thing. There's a combination of things that are in play, and I think that there's room to point fingers each direction. Now, it's always easier to just replace one coach than it is to replace a bunch of players. Mm-hmm. But the easiest thing is to maintain some continuity, take out some of the pieces that didn't work, and add some new pieces, and hopefully that will rectify the situation. So, honestly, I could see this team doing anything. I could see them firing him. Yeah. I could see them retaining him. I don't know. But I certainly could see a scenario where Saturday's result matters. It would be, I think, an embarrassment to this organization if Sky Blue's only win of the year came against the Pride.
That's a good point.
So we'll see what happens. We'll be back to talk about it next week, of course. And, you know, maybe at that point we'll have a little more clarity on what we'll talk about going into the off season and what the big storylines are. Certainly who stays and who goes, both from the coaching perspective and from the player's perspective, will be a food for many conversations between now and next March. Dave, Orlando City at Sporting Kansas City. This is Dom's return. This is Yuri Rosell's return to the Blue Hell. And I need to get your key matchup and your scoreline prediction.
Okay. Key matchup is going to be, it's so hard because, like we said earlier, who knows who's even going to be on the field. Key matchup is going to be whether they can get some service into Dom to let him get some goals. If we don't have Yoshi and we've got to rely on somebody else to get the ball in for Dom to score, if that can't happen, if that doesn't happen, then it's a long night for Orlando City. If it does, if Dom's able to get some quality shots, I think maybe things go better. Ultimately, though, on the road, we talked about it before, haven't won in really, really, really long time. So I'm going to stick with my prediction from last week, 2-1. Dom does get a goal, but it's unfortunately the only one. And the road woes continue.
I am going to say the key matchup for me, Dave, is going to be Sasha Kljestan against the defensive midfield and defenders stepping up for Kansas City. I think that Sasha has to be a pivotal cog in the Orlando City attack for the Lions to have any chance in this game. With Yoshi gone, we need the good Sasha. We need the Sasha that we've seen a few times this year We haven't seen him quite as much as we thought we would, but we definitely need that guy pulling the strings, slipping in excellent passes for Dom Dwyer to run onto, and whoever else is in the attack. Certainly, it'll be more defensive midfielders because there's not enough wing players on this team. I think that Sasha Kljestan will be a key for Orlando City to have any kind of a chance in this game. As for my score prediction, as you mentioned, it's on the road. As you mentioned, it is a team that's won one time in 17 games. I'm saying 3-1 Kansas City, and the returning man who scores the goal is not Dom Dwyer, but Uri
Ooh.
Rossell.
Oh, twist.
How's that for
Look.
a bold prediction?
That is spicy and bold, sir. Very well
Yes.
done.
Do not fret the bold flavors. Do not duck the bold flavors from the Mainland podcast. We are as spicy as they get.
Well, we've may have just ensured that Orlando City either draws or maybe even wins with taking two out of three of the ways that they could really truly probably lose out of the equation with our predictions.
Perhaps, but do not underestimate my one game correct picking streak.
That's right, you are on a one game streak. I had forgotten about
That's right.
that.
Don't mess with my streak,
He's
Dave.
turned the corner.
That's right. The best thing about getting one in a row is the chance to get two in a row. That's
That's
what.
true.
All right, so that'll do it for episode 141 of the Mainland Podcast. We will be back next week to talk about Orlando City at Sporting KC, the Pride at Sky Blue. We'll have U.S. men's national team friendlies to talk about. We'll recap the final U.S. women's national team friendly with Chile heading into the, of course, CONCACAF Championship, as the draw was announced today. The U.S. has drawn with Mexico, Trinidad and Tobago, and Panama. So it should be a group that the U.S. should win. They're going to start that. They're going to start that run against Mexico. So that should be, speaking of spicy, that should be a spicy opener for the U.S. women.
Oh,
Looking
spicy
forward.
indeed.
Yeah, looking forward to that. All right, so we'll do it again next week. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to those who submitted questions, and of course, thank you to Thad Bell of the Blue Testament for stopping by and giving us the 411 on Sporting KC. We'll see what happens against the Sporks on Saturday night. Of course, you can read our stuff at themainland.com and check us out on Twitter at themainland. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to this here podcast on iTunes. And of course, write us a nice 5-star review and we'll read it on the air.
Yes, we
And
will.
that will do it. 141 is in the books. On behalf of David Rowe, I'm Michael Citro, founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying, Go City and Go Pride.